Yeah, I think that is absolutely right, man. We are right on the edge of summer. Well, talking about getting everything that we asked for, we're getting a little bit more spice than we typically ask for a college football off season. And I think to catch people up in the last 48 hours, we have had kind of some bombshell news. Not necessarily news in terms of like what is being leveled, but kind of this feud that has really picked up between Alabama football, Texas A&M football, of course, head coach Nick Saban of Alabama. To give the folks some background, Deb, Saban was speaking at some sort of like Rotary conference or something like that, not necessarily to a sports crowd, but said something along the lines of, you know, NIL, it's bad that there's no structure in place and teams are going crazy. I mean, look at Texas A&M. Saban then kind of accused A&M of buying each one of their players that led to them getting the best recruiting class this past offseason. Also alleged that Jacksonville State and head coach Deion Sanders paid $1 million to land a great recruit for their team. And that led to Jimbo Fisher, the head coach for Texas A&M, getting absolutely stark raving mad and holding a wild 10-minute press conference that I have to just encourage people to go see to believe. It will very likely singe your eyebrows off with all of the stuff he was mentioning. So with that in mind, Deb, again, I think the best thing to do is to go read the comments from the coaches if you haven't yet, but I know that you're up on all of this, so I want to start here. What strikes you more, that a coach would actually say that stuff about another coach within his conference, about you know, his former boss, his former mentor in some ways, or the fact that a coach has kind of broken these unspoken rules of you don't really dig up the dirt on another program, you don't accuse another program of really kind of going past the rules?
Well, there's no doubt there are so many ways, which ways to slice and dice this, and certainly the two that you mentioned. The first thing I'll say is that Nick Saban, and I don't want to offend anyone, but Nick Saban is a 70-year-old man that just can't keep his mouth shut. You have earned, you're at the highest level. You have a dynasty. You make more money than I would say maybe 10, 12 governors, leaders of different states put together. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. He was wrong, and he admitted it. Now, he didn't back away from his dislike of name, image, and likeness, which is fueling more recruiting wars at his level. But he did admit that he was wrong to single out certain schools. There are many, many problems with this. The one good thing is that it puts college football in the heart of NBA, NHL, spring sports. So that's the big win for college football. Everything else that I could possibly think of, it is a big stain. It's ugly. It's not being a role model for young people. It makes them, in particular, Nick Saban in Alabama, look like spoiled children. Now, for Jumbo Fisher to jump in, I don't fault him. This is a man that was brought to Texas A&M and win. And as he stated, you're just attacking who I am. In fact, Fisher is quoted as saying, "I don't cheat and I don't lie. I learned that when I was a kid. And if you did, the old man slapped you upside the head." Maybe somebody should have slapped him, as in Saban. What is also terrible about this, well, maybe it's not terrible. Maybe it's revealing. Is that Fisher, in his press conference, he basically told the world that while he himself and other coaches were working under Saban, that they cheated, that Alabama was breaking recruiting rules. So now this brings in Alabama, you need to be quiet. You need to be quiet.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... It's pretty, that quote is one of the ones where you just kind of shake your head and you go, an actual college football coach and an SEC coach, no less, said that about a fellow SEC coach. And, you know, you roll your eyes a little bit because Jimbo Fisher headed up some pretty talented programs at Florida State. He's in the SEC. We know kind of that football is different for them, as they say, as their conference logo. It just means something different to be in the SEC. But You know, it does, and we have seen the commissioner of the SEC, Greg Sankey, come out with a strong statement against both of these coaches, essentially doing more than just slapping on the wrist and saying, hey, guys, you're doing exactly what we wanted people to not do, which is put out there so clearly that college football is king when it not only when it comes to athletics, but when it comes to, for some, actual full-blown universities. It's, you know, that's of course been evident with what we've seen in this first year of NIL, name, image, and likeness compensation for students, and the differences that we have on a state-to-state basis. And I, you know, that's the one part of Nick Saban's comments that I agree on. And I think Jimbo Fisher probably agrees on it to some extent too. But, you know, what people consider...
Well, one of the difference...
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the big difference is that NIL has been going on at Alabama and other schools for years, decades.
Yeah.
What's different now is that everybody else gets to participate. And this is where Nick Saban is just off. He's for some reason, he just doesn't think that anybody should ever compete with Alabama in recruiting. And what this has really dug up is that now you've got former SEC players on Twitter confirming to their friends things that they were given, cars, cash. You know, so it's just exposing, again, if you're not familiar with college football or you're a casual fan, you might not realize this, but it is big business. It's professional sports. Athletes are being paid all the time by people who work in the administration, fans, donors. That is big time football. And so now it's been exposed.
Yeah. So I've got two really broad questions here, Deb, that I'm hoping that you can just provide your perspective on. The first one is kind of, how did we get to that point? What percentage of blame would you put on the schools for letting it get as out of hand as it has, both before NIL and now that NIL is legal? What percentage would you put on the conferences for allowing it? And what percentage would you put on the NCAA for kind of knowing that it was happening, but probably not being, or being selectively strict, I think is the fair way to put it.
Well, for someone who does a lot of work with race and racism and racial equity, one of the most important principles to understand is that you have to organize. You can't be a lone wolf trying to change culture, trying to call systems and institutions out for bad behavior. And this is the situation here. This is college sport, as in this is educational institutions. And the buck stops with the university president. In fact, even though we have layers of meetings and committees and people in charge of this and all of that, the actual vote is made by university presidents. Now, because it is so complex and it's so such a large magnitude, you have to have an athletic director. You need somebody to handle, you know, this particular thing. You need somebody to handle budgeting. You need somebody to make policies and, you know, all these things that help a university president. But it stops with the university president. Now, with that being said, most university presidents don't have a degree in sport management, sport administration. Many of them have not gone to business school. Many of them are just wonderful, amazing, bright intellectuals. And now all of a sudden they're handed a major multi-million dollar unit. And so they aren't organized. University presidents are not organized to say, you know what, this is really taking over my university. It hurts our faculty. It helps our general students. Everything from, hey, you've got to get out of the parking deck because there's a game tonight, right? Everything from, we've got a game starting at 9 p.m. Eastern time, when you know your students have to get up for an 8 o'clock a.m. class. All of these things bother, they hurt, they disturb university presidents, but they're not organized well enough to push back. And so the train is down the track, and most university presidents, again, because you can't do it all, you've assigned it to people who either want to fight back or they've become so comfortable with the money and all the attention and the winning. So if I were going to give a percentage, I would say 90% is with university presidents, with educational institutions that allow this to happen.
Yeah. I mean, that makes a whole lot of sense. And also the problem is, too, their power can ultimately be limited because of who is the one who then hires them. If you have a couple of board of trustees members or, you know, some sort of governing body that makes the president selection or hire who are just big fans, don't necessarily, you know, care a lot about the school, but also care a lot about the athletics. You could have a situation where if a president decides he wants to take a hard stance and that does somehow affect athletics, there are others who can pull the strings, others who can go beyond the university president. That can then cause a stink and create some issues. I think that that's a very good point. So the other general
and
question.
Let me just say this, though. And then if we follow that, play it out, then ultimately it comes back to us. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the public schools, right? We as voters. So if we believe that there is a renegade university that's spending our money or making decisions that aren't in the best interest of the students, athletes, students, then we should vote them out of office. But again, we're caught up in this too. We love turning on the TV and seeing a national championship game or seeing, you know, football players do this and do that. And then we get to see them in the NFL. So we're all caught up in this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So the other general question is this, Deb, and we have just a few more moments. So I'm curious to how you might be able to do this succinctly, but I don't know if it's possible. Where do we go from here? Specifically in terms of college football when it comes to this, because it has felt for a while like college football's been at a boiling point. I mean, we've had talks of the SEC breaking off and making their own super league, and it's strictly because of their proficiency at football, their high profile games and their high profile programs when it comes to football. So do you
you're being polite and saying proficiency is commercialization, it's money.
There you go.
And so the simple answer is that they need to break off. The interests aren't common anymore. You know, what James Madison and what North Carolina A&T are trying to do can't compete with a LSU, with a Clemson. And so they need to split off and do their own thing. And in many regards, you know, we can learn from other countries where you've got club teams, club sports, where other people can fund it. It doesn't have to be attached to a university. I really think that we need to just discuss this. We need to think about it. Just like, well, I won't even go there. We just need more discussion around the what we need to do in terms of college football.
Yeah, because it's clear that, you know, the system has not been right at the same time, for a long time, I should say, and the system has heavily weighed football so much more than any other college athletic that it makes sense that as soon as the NIL floodgates opened, this would be the sport where we start to see the most like unusual and potentially shady deals, and even if they're not illegal, shady deals popping up.
Let me just bring this back to Carolina. The challenging thing for UNC is that we're caught in the middle. We want to play with Alabama. We want to win games. We want to be in the biggest bowls. We want to be in the college football playoff. But on the other side, we don't have the fan base. We don't have the money. And I believe, and call me naive, but I don't think we're at the level of some of these schools that will do anything to win. I just don't think that's North Carolina. We do some things, okay? I'm not naive in that regard. We do some things that some people go, really? Yes, we do that. But we're just not at that other level where we just want to say, you know what? Academics, do your own thing, but over here in sports, we're going to do whatever we want, and you better not say anything against it. That's not Carolina.
Yeah.
So we're caught. We're caught in the middle.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. This is a conversation that I think is only just beginning, and you know, this might throw fuel to the fire, but I think now everybody is going to have October 8th circled on their calendars when A&M and Alabama play each other, because we can't wait to see what's next. We can't wait to see what goes on. And, you know, while that will be exciting, I think it's also kind of a referendum of where we are. But as always, Deb Stroman, thank you so much for the time. Hey, let's do this again. Let's do this again soon, shall we?
Let's do it. Everybody have a very cool weekend.
Yes, yes, indeed. It is 5:48 on 97.9 The Hill. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, another